Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, precis så kommer Scott Dixon in. Okej. Okay. Är du redo?
Yes.
Välkomna till Indiepodden avsnitt 66. Den här veckan blir det faktiskt två avsnitt. Den andra delen av vårt säsongsuppsnack hör ni på torsdag. Men idag blir det finbesök. Nästan kungligt, eller vad säger du, Anna?
Ja, helt fantastiskt. Där får man ha en legend på tråden. Hur lycklig blir man inte då?
För vi har ju då som sagt Scott Dixon på besök. Och han är inte bara regerande mästare i IndyCar då från förra året. Han har ju så hela 6 mästerskap och en seger i Indy 500 på CV:t. Och hittills har han alltså klockat in 50 vinster i IndyCar. Och sen, där är han väl tredje bäst genom tiderna, tror jag, än så länge.
Ja, det ska väl stämma, va? Och sen så kan han ju faktiskt vinna sin 7:e titel inom amerikansk formelbilsracing, typ IndyCar eller liknande. Och då kliver han ju upp jämsides med AJ Foyt.
Men han har ju dessutom 121 podiumplaceringar, det är ju inte heller så illa pinkat.
Nej, det kan man väl inte säga, va? Sen så, alltså bara själva grejen att få prata med en framgångsrik idrottsman som dessutom är så ödmjuk. Det är ju faktiskt väldigt givande.
Och 2021 då så påbörjade han sin 20:e säsong i Chip Ganassi då. Och även om det är lätt liksom att tänka att Scott börjar bli lite till åren med sina 40 år, så är han ju bara barnet om man jämför med andra förare på griden i år. Vad är vi? Tony Kanaan, Jimmy Johnson, alla de här är ju 44, 45, 46 år.
Ja, Takuma Sato är ju också 44, så att, det är ju ingenting. Det är ju, börjar ju bli liksom som rallycross här, det är mogna mäns mästerskap.
Men det var en väldigt trevlig prat med Scott och vi pratade ju både om det ena och det andra, men dels förutsättningen inför 2021 då, men även lite annat.
Ja, vi pratade ju om Sverige faktiskt en hel del. Eftersom man har lite svensk kopplingar. Vi pratade om det här faktum att han har varit i samma team i 20 år. Och det är faktiskt väldigt intressant. För det är ju en lite skillnad där kan jag uppleva på de här framgångsrika förarna i IndyCar och exempelvis Formel 1. Att i IndyCar så är det ett framgångsrecept att hålla sig till samma team och utvecklas tillsammans. I Formel 1 så är det ju mer så att bilen har en större betydelse. Där väljer man gärna att byta team till det som har den bästa bilen. Mm. Och sen den här motivationsfrågan också är ju intressant. Alltså vad är det som motiverar en människa att hålla på med samma sak så länge? Och hur länge är det roligt att vinna? Och hur roligt är det att vinna egentligen?
Ja, det verkar vara det bästa han vet, förutom efter familjen då. Så att, där fanns det ju ingen brist på motivation om man säger så. Men han lägger ut texten lite mer om det. Och det var faktiskt väldigt intressant att lyssna på. Men vad tog du med dig från pratstunden då?
Energin tog jag med mig från den pratstunden. Jag hade ju en sån här härlig dag där jag både fick tillbringa med Nilla Fischer en timme på förmiddagen och Scott Dixon och sen direkt iväg till mitt J-lag i handboll som hade intervallträning. Så det var en oerhört energidag, sån här sprudlande, härligt. Så det tog jag med mig från den dagen.
Ska vi se om lyssnarna får samma energi här nu när vi spelar upp vår intervju med Scott Dixon. Varsågoda.
So, a warm welcome to Scott Dixon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's good to finally link up and talk to you guys. So, looking forward to it.
So, if you look to the upcoming season, what are your expectations?
The expectations, as always, I think with Chip Ganassi Racing, and that's to win. You know, we definitely go. We treat it week by week, and we set 2 goals for the season. First, to win the Indianapolis 500, and secondly, to win the championship. But yeah, we definitely are a very disappointed team if we don't come away with a victory each time we go. So, you know, those are the goals and that's the standard of this team. And, you know, it's been very successful. So nothing has changed too much. And it's going to be an interesting year, obviously expanding from 3 cars to 4 cars. There's been a lot of growth in the team with the off-season, you know, with the 4th IndyCar, the Extreme E program, and then also the IMSA, you know, Cadillac program as well. So it's been a busy off-season for Chip Ganassi Racing.
Yeah, how would you describe your off-season or pre-season?
It's been pretty good. You know, I think each year it seems like, you know, pre-season testing, at least for IndyCar, becomes less and less. You know, the protocols get a little more difficult as well too, whether it's, you know, the utilization of the tires, you know, the tires might be from, you know, a previous season, you know, so trying to, you know, focus in on what you need and the shift of the tire can be a little bit tough as well. But I think all of the tests, I had a bit of a rough test at Laguna Seca. Just we didn't really learn a whole lot because of the weather conditions, I felt like, and you know, we were the only team there, so the track didn't rubber up too much. But I'd say Sebring and Alabama have gone very well. We'll be testing at Indianapolis this week for the overtake situation, which is for the introduction of the 2023 hybrid version of the engine. So testing's gone, you know, pretty well. I think we've definitely made some pretty interesting finds and developments, especially on the damper side.
Is there anything you can tell us about the developments?
Mostly just on, you know, I think for us as a team, you know, we try to understand, you know, where our flaws were or where we were, you know, not as efficient. You know, 2019 to 2020 season was a big change for all of us, and just, you know, with COVID. But performance wise, you know, I think I had the best qualifying average for 2019, and then we struggled quite a bit actually in 2020, especially on the road course package, and that was across all of the cars, I would say. So, you know, the focus has been on, you know, trying to understand the tire a little bit better, the performance of, you know, switching the tire on, and then, you know, kind of educating the drivers of how to best do this. But yeah, I'd say, you know, the program on the damper side and the shock absorbers for Chip Ganassi Racing, you know, it's one of the few things that you can do kind of in-house to, you know, quite an extent, you know, with inerters and all that kind of stuff. So I would say that's probably where we've focused most on, you know, trying to bring performance back in qualifying situations.
And last year you had a really great start and it was a really tight fight in the end. Is there anything you have learned from last season that you can bring into the new season?
You're constantly learning, you know, I think even from session to session or, you know, race weekend to race weekend, you know, it never stops. And I think, you know, with IndyCar racing, as many formulas, it's ever evolving, right? You know, whether it's just ambient and weather conditions, you know, it's you've got to go into each weekend with an open mind and fully understanding that, you know, you have to change maybe what you were doing at that place last year. You know, last year is a last season, you know, counts for some things, but, you know, it doesn't guarantee you anything. You know, it's moving so fast these days. So, you know, I think for us, you know, we definitely, again, I think if you focus in on, you know, some of the deficiencies that we had later in the season with the weather conditions, especially in Indianapolis, road course one to road course two, you know, we struggled, you know, a lot once it cooled off. So, you know, there's different things that I, as a driver, will change this season with preparation as far as, you know, turning the tires on and you know, qualifying. Definitely made some mistakes, which I, you know, normally pride myself on not doing, you know, Indy road course. The second one was a rough weekend, but then, you know, the silly mistake I made at Mid-Ohio. Race two was, you know, which was pretty tough to swallow. So, you know, there's definitely stuff that I continuously try to work on and hopefully better myself for sure.
It's a little bit interesting, I think, because you have been with the same team for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
How do you develop together? I mean, if you look back in the times you had with the team, is there anything you could say to the young Scott Dixon? Oh, that's the thing that we should have worked on, or that's something that we should have done differently.
I think, you know, it's easy to look in the rearview mirror and you know, maybe backseat drive a little bit, but honestly, I think, you know, you make mistakes, you know, it's part of human nature and part of what, you know, I think the biggest thing is making sure that you learn from those mistakes. And I feel like I've definitely made mistakes through my career and, you know, a majority of those I feel like I've really learned from. As a team, you know, I've been very lucky that I've, you know, been with the team for 20 years, but nothing's really stayed stagnant. You know, nothing has stayed the same. You know, there's been a lot of different teammates. I don't know how many teammates I've had, you know, through that 20 year period, but it's been, you know, probably over 20. So, you know, that I think for me is the most interesting part. You know, I've been very lucky to have some amazing teammates, you know, throughout my whole career at that team, and be able to, you know, see how they approach a race weekend, to, you know, try and pick out the best parts and try and emulate that as well. And you know, change my style for different things. And you know, that was very true for, you know, Dan Weldon or Dario Franchitti or you know, Felix or Marcus or even Alex right now. So, you know, it's ever evolving. And, you know, I think the biggest thing at this team is that it never stops. You know, it's energy that it has for the constant will to win is quite fascinating. And you notice it as soon as you go through the doors. It can be quite daunting to start with. You know, when I first walked through the doors at, you know, the age of 21, you know, it's a pretty daunting place to be at. But you know, as you can tell, they're very good at what they do.
You have been with Stefan for the same time. Must that also be 20 years? What has he meant for your career?
Yeah, Stefan, I think, has been a little bit longer, right? Maybe 22 or 23 years. I think we first met maybe in end of 98 and then part of my Indy Lights contract, because they subsidized it pretty heavily, him and Vern Schuppen, that it continued on to a driver contract, management contract, you know, from that period on. So Stefan's been a fantastic mentor, you know, I think through, you know, his life in motor racing, you know, in Europe or, you know, even at that point to America, to the people he knows, you know, to now with what he does with drivers and management and things like that. So, you know, he's just, I think, you know, first and foremost, he's one of my best friends. But secondly, you know, he's someone that you can always bounce ideas off or, you know, talk to about different scenarios, whether it's on a race weekend or anything like that. So, you know, it's always been a really fun partnership and you know, one that we both enjoy.
We actually have a listener's question there from Jonas Magnusson. Stefan is known for his storytelling abilities. However, do you have any stories about Stefan that he would never dare to tell himself?
Stefan, I will say, is you know, he comes across a little bit shy sometimes. I think he's got a big heart. I probably won't go into too many stories, but yes, there's definitely, you know, some pretty fun stories for Stefan. And yeah, he flies under the radar. You know, there was one actually at St. Pete last year. I'm like, hey, man, you know, it looked like you had a pretty tired, you know, did you have a big night? And he's like, no, I went to bed early. You know, I knew he left the track early, but he had some fun times, I think, that night. But, you know, he keeps things under the radars for sure. But yeah, no, I think it's you know, the biggest thing for me with Stefan is just who he is as a person. You know, he's very open-minded, but has a big heart. You know, I think he sometimes can be pushed around a little bit, but then he definitely digs his heels in. But yeah, there's you need to get the both of us on, and there's definitely some good stories that Stefan can tell, that's for sure.
We can't help but notice that you have had your habit of surrounding yourself with Swedes. We actually got another listener question on that topic from Marcus Anderson, who says, you now have Marcus as your teammate. Last year you had also had Felix. How would you define them as drivers and teammates, and what are their differences?
Honestly, they've been fantastic teammates. You know, I've known Felix for quite a long time, maybe back to 2015 or 16. I think I first met him maybe in California when we were out testing, you know, when he was first started working with Stefan, and then followed his career, obviously, in junior categories and then off to FE. And even during the 3 years previous, I think, of him joining the team, he had done, you know, some of our rookie tests, I think they were called, you know, back in those days, where he would, you know, come and you'd get an additional test there because of someone like him coming over. So I would say his personality is pretty similar to mine. He's pretty quiet. He's, you know, very hardworking. And Marcus, you know, I haven't known for very long, you know, a couple of years at this point, obviously followed his career as well. And then obviously in Formula One. But I think, you know, they're quite similar to Kiwis in a way where, you know, they kind of fly under the radar a bit or are not, you know, super in your face, but they work really hard. They know what the dedication and hard work it takes. You know, it's kind of instilled. I think, you know, our countries are quite similar in that way. Whereas others just culturally are very different. And then I think on the track, so, you know, Felix, you know, has a very good sense of being very adaptive. You know, I think, you know, first street courses or places that he goes to for the first time is very quick. You know, the first session, he comes out of the box very fast. Whereas, you know, I feel like I kind of build over the weekend a little bit more than him. And you know, Marcus, it can be very much the same. And I don't know if that's, you know, maybe growing up where they did and maybe they were driving rally cars and all kinds of crazy stuff at that point, but they're very quick on the mark and you know, quite adaptive as well. So, you know, it's been fun to work with both of them. Unfortunately, you know, Felix didn't stick around for too long. He moved on. But you know, Marcus is a great friend and enjoy his company and enjoy working with him on race weekends.
Is there any differences as you see it between those two as drivers?
Yeah, you know, I would say that Marcus's style is fairly similar to mine. Actually, he's quite aggressive. You know, Felix again can be he can have fairly light inputs, which on a low grip circuit seem to work extremely well. You know, the likes of Laguna Seca or some of the street course you know, circuits. The driving style definitely, I think, evolves through the season. And that's where these guys are quite good too, is that they're adaptive, right? You're not just, you know, there are many drivers and teammates that I've had through my career that just do one thing, which doesn't always work, especially in IndyCar racing where, you know, you're doing street courses, road courses, short track ovals, you know, super speedways. Marcus has a crazy you know, driving style on ovals too, where, you know, I have to get the car very neutral and very loose to get it to rotate. And Felix, I feel like, is the same as me. Whereas Marcus is able to drive the car with more understeer and get it to turn and just, you know, the way he, you know, approaches a corner and doesn't saturate the tire. So there's so many different things, I think, through a weekend that you can pick out and what they do differently. And some are better and some are not as good, but they are able to change it. So, you know, I like their approach. They're very dedicated. And as we've seen, you know, they're very, very good drivers.
How do you see their future?
Hopefully bright. You know, it's been great to work with Marcus so far. And I think each season, you know, he's definitely adapted and got better. You know, this year, I think is definitely a year that, you know, even in preseason testing, I think he's done a very good job of knowing what he needs to work on. You know, but at a point, you know, you're going to have to start winning races and, you know, getting some great results. And I think this year is going to be a breakthrough year for him. You know, Felix, is going to be, this will be an interesting year for him. You know, he's gone to a new team, which is not always easy. You know, I think having, you know, him know the paddock and the people and people like that, I think Stefan will obviously help, you know, with that phase and that shift to the new team. He's going up against a very strong teammate, which will be very quick as well. And he had a great, you know, great season last year. So he have, you know, a lot of confidence. You know, but I think as long as the team allows Felix to kind of apply, you know, the way he likes the car and how to drive it, I think he'll be a tough competitor for sure. And you know, hopefully racing for a championship as well.
And we talked about Stefan, and then there's another person that I assume has meant a lot to you, and that's your wife, Emma. Mm-hmm. Somewhere, yeah. I read that she's more competitive than you are. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think she's, you know, she's a super competitive person. I think, you know, the two most competitive people I know are, you know, my wife and our team owner, Chip, you know. So having that combo, you know, with Chip, I get it at the racetrack. And then when I get home, I get it from Emma too on the competitive side. She was a runner for Great Britain in 800 meters. So, you know, I think her determination and obviously her, her youth and doing what she did, you know, it's a pretty brutal sport. So she has a very strong mind. But yeah, she's super competitive. It's more on, so like when I'm not in a racing environment or and even indoor go-karting, I'll be pretty relaxed. But when it comes to a competitive situation of being, you know, in the IndyCar series or IMSA or anything like that, you know, I'm definitely one of the most competitive people out there. But I know when to bring it back and not use all my energy, whereas Chip and her are flat out competitive the whole time, no matter what it is, whether it's a board game or, you know, finishing a book first or putting the kid down first or anything like that. So she doesn't have a point where she kind of relaxes on the competitiveness.
But can you train together then?
We do. We typically will run quite a bit together. Obviously, she's very fast. I'm more of an endurance training, so you know, I love triathlons and love long distance running and things like that. Her, I think she would be a great long distance runner too, but her attention span is very short. So when you run with her, it's like very fast, and then she'll kind of, you know, be like, oh, look at the birds over there, and you know, the tempo will come down a bit, and then she'll take off again. So it's a very up and down run if you run with Emma. But you know, I think, you know, she could be a super strong runner on if she, you know, her attention span could get a little bit better. But we train as much as we can together. She comes to the gym, obviously, you know, sometimes with me. So yeah, we try to, but running, I would say is both our passion. So, you know, why that works well.
What is there anything that you have learned from her? Anything that you can thank her for your career?
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, having someone that's been in a sport to a very high level, I think is you know, quite welcoming in the fact, because you know the highs and lows that everybody goes through, or that, you know, people in those industries maybe go through, you know. So I think for me to have somebody, you know, we're very much teammates and teamwork, and you know, she has helped me in many areas, whether it's from, you know, nutrition to, you know, the training side, to making sure, you know, I rest enough, to, you know, focusing on the right things. You know, she's a very positive person. You know, so it she helps in many ways for sure. I think with my career and you know, she's always been someone that's, you know, a very strong person to lean on, and in times that can be tough, you know, and you know, it's been big for me for sure.
Yeah. But if you look, I mean, for a career like yours, winning so many championships and the Indy 500s, and you are going to your plus 40, how do you focus, and where do you get your motivation?
I think a lot of it, you know, honestly, for me, it's the people around me. You know, it's, you know, some of it's Emma, some of it's Chip, you know, some of it's, you know, my career and how it started, and the people that, you know, helped me get here, you know, whether it starts with my parents to, you know, the investor group that I had, you know, that started at the age of, you know, 14 or 15 to get me here. You know, I feel like there's a lot of will to want to make sure that the effort that all these people put in was worthwhile. So, you know, that's a part of it, but a lot of it is just the competitiveness of the series. You know, I think year in, year out, it changes so much that, you know, it always feels fresh and new. You know, yes, there are some things that, you know, whether it's training, that can get a bit old sometimes, but, you know, even with, you know, how I've worked with PitFit, which is a training company here in Indianapolis, they change up what you do so often that it, you know, it is quite refreshing. But, you know, I'd say deep down, you know, the biggest inspiration and you know, fire for me is, you know, the will to win and honestly to, you know, show that, you know, what these people invested in me was worthwhile.
In the will to win, you won in the 500 and you won the championship. Which one is the best win?
They're very different. Even championships are so different, you know, on the way that you won them. You know, last year was the first time I won from, you know, led the championship from start to finish, to feel the pressures of, you know, starting to lose the points gap towards the end of the year. I'd never really had that before, you know. So all of them are very different. The Indy 500, you know, 2008 for me was the perfect year. You know, I got married in February, won the 500 in May, and then, you know, went on to win the championship, you know, kind of in October. So it was, you know, those years are unforgettable for so many reasons. I guess, Indy 500 is, they're just so different, you know, because trying to get everything right in that 3.5 hour period is almost impossible. You know, I've been lucky enough and blessed to win it once, you know, but I've also finished second there 4 or 5 times under caution, you know, so you've never had that opportunity to try and finish the race and win it, you know, so it's very emotional at that place. And then, you know, I think with a championship, you know, you have the ups and downs of, you know, a 6 or 8 month period that, you know, you can work out. But I don't know, I really enjoy the championships because in IndyCar, again, the disciplines are so different, you know, street courses, road courses. You can't be just good at one discipline. You have to be good at everything and apply it to win the championship. You know, gone are the days of just being good on ovals. You know, that doesn't count anymore. Gone are the days of just being a good road course racer. Doesn't count anymore either. So I don't know. It's a tough one. Would I swap some championships for 500? Probably right now, just because we lost so closely last year in a weird situation that, you know, the 500 for me is definitely a big one that I want again, for sure.
You mentioned before the importance of being good at every single type of racetrack, being at a road course or street course and oval. We have a question from Tobias Wettermark, who asks, which type of track is your favorite and why?
Well, you know, coming from New Zealand, it'd be road courses. You know, it's what I grew up doing. But it's a weird sensation on ovals, you know, and I feel like you kind of like them or you don't. And, you know, it can be tricky. You know, the unfortunate part with the current, you know, schedule is that, you know, we only have 3 tracks and 4 races this season. Hopefully they start to build on that. But I think that they are, again, so different. You know, you can drive around things on road courses. You can manipulate the car a little bit different, you know, on oval. I think it teaches you, you know, the fundamental basics again of, you know, how to set up a car to make sure that you're comfortable, what works right for you, because, you know, one driver to the other, you can do the same exact lap speed and go through the corner at the same speed, but the car can be completely different just on how you feel it. So, you know, I think you need a strange also inner confidence on an oval, almost an overconfidence, I think, to, you know, especially when you're good on them, to, you know, you get that flow and, you know, that car on the edge, you know, say Indianapolis and qualifying, you're going into turn one at almost 250 miles an hour. And you don't know if it's going to stick. You know, you've got to kind of just force that right foot to stay flat and make sure that you can get through that corner to give you, you know, the best lap speed that's possible. And it takes kind of a strange mind kind of scenario for that to enable, because the whole time, you know, your brain is telling your foot to lift off that pedal, because it doesn't seem right, you know, to go into a corner at that speed and you know, come out on the other side. So yeah, I don't know. My all-time favorite probably racetrack is probably Phillip Island in Melbourne, which is a fantastic circuit. In America, is probably Watkins Glen or Road America. And then I don't know, I love short track ovals. It's been a lot of fun, you know. I haven't won there, but it's a track that I really enjoy, and I enjoy the high bank situation of a short track, and you know, the possibility that it has. And Milwaukee is probably an all-time favorite for a short track oval.
But you said your brain wants your foot to stop, but your foot just go. How do you manage that, to get the foot going?
Yeah, it's weird too, though, because sometimes you'll come in and you're like, oh, it's flat. And then, you know, they call it driver flat, where your foot actually does waver a little bit, and you weren't completely 100% flat throughout the corner. You know, so it I don't know. It's just because the sensation too, right? You're just, you know, you're kind of floating on the edge, right? So, you know, you're constantly trying to feel if the car is actually going to make the corner and not turn too far or not turn at all. You know, that you're making these kind of really small adjustments, you know, so quickly through this corner. But a lot of the time too, it becomes second nature, right? Like you've been doing it for so long and that it just becomes a natural thing. But I will say, once you do get it right and you get through that corner and you went flat, and you're like, you know, it makes it worthwhile, because the feeling of doing it is so good that you just want to keep replicating it. But at Indy, it's tough, because each time you go through you know, one, two, three, or four, the conditions are changing constantly. So you never have confidence. It's such a big relief when you have a good run, whether you're on pole or not, but at Indianapolis, when you finish that first qualifying run, that you've completed it, you know, is like, it's a lot of weight lifted off your shoulders, and it's a pretty cool feeling.
If you look at the season coming ahead, you have Jimmy Johnson and you have Alex Palou as new teammates, and Marcus. What do you see as the key moments for this season for you as a team with your four cars?
I think, as always, you know, is to try and start strong. You know, it definitely hasn't been a theme maybe for the nine car for a while, until last year when we had an extremely strong start. But I think for us as a team, you know, that's going to be ideal. I think Barber being the first circuit, you know, is hopefully positive. We had a really good test there just recently. We want to win, you know, and you know, I think Jimmy's approach is maybe a little bit different, obviously coming from such an extreme and you know, trying to get caught up as quick as possible. But, you know, for him, it's been really tough. He's basically had to try and unlearn everything he's done for the past 20 or 25 years before he can start learning, you know, how to apply himself in a scenario that's, you know, extremely difficult. You know, the competitiveness of the NTT IndyCar series right now is insane. So yeah, I think there's different goals for some different people on the team, but you know, I'd say honestly for myself, you know, Alex and Marcus is to come out of the gate strong and win the first race, win the first four races. That's what we want to do, you know. So it's going to be an interesting start to the year. Obviously, it's changed up a little bit. Barber, St. Pete, and then, you know, doubleheader at Texas, you know, before you get rolling into, you know, the month of May and start at the Speedway. But expectations are, as always, very high, and we want to win.
Yeah, as you said, the competition is more crazy than ever. So we have a last question, also from a listener, Bess Johansson. He is wondering, who do you consider to be your main rival for 2021? Who do you need? Of course, you need to beat everyone to win the championship. But who do you consider to be your toughest rival to beat?
I think, you know, it's hard, right? Because, you know, I think you go into each year looking at teams, you know, and Team Penske are always extremely strong. You know, really, I think for the majority of last year, it was just really myself and Joseph that, you know, set out a really big gap to the rest of the field on at least the points side. I think Andretti are going to be very strong this year. You know, they had a rough one last year, and I know coming off a rough season how much fire that puts in you. So I expect, you know, that team to be strong. But I think always, you know, team competition, you know, so I think, you know, Marcus and Alex are going to be, you know, very, very tough competitors. And I hope, you know, through the season too, that Jimmy, with more laps and more time in the car, are going to be very strong. But yeah, I don't know. Straight out of the box, Alex, Marcus, Joseph. But there's you know, once Will Power gets on a roll, it's tough to stop. You know, then you've got the additions of McLaughlin and Pagenaud. Pagenaud's the same. If he gets comfortable with the car, you know, look at the championship year that he won. So this is the problem with IndyCar racing, is that I can list off 10 people, but we'll have to wait and see.
So that's why you do IndyCar, not Formula One.
Yeah, Formula One, you can pretty much pick once preseason's testing is done, or the first couple of races, you know who the two people are going to be. If, you know, normally from the same team. So, yeah.
So thank you very, very much for taking the time speaking to us, and the best of luck for the upcoming season.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for all the great questions, and hopefully talk to you again soon.
Vi släpper faktiskt ytterligare ett avsnitt av podden den här veckan, och då kommer vi snacka ännu mer om förutsättningarna inför den kommande säsongen och lite grann hur läget är för Scott och hans svenska kollega Marcus Eriksson.
Och vi vill tacka alla som skickade in frågor, och det börjar bli många så här, så tyvärr hinner vi inte ställa alla då, men och vi missade ju nämna ett par namn, så Kent Bengtssons motivationsfråga till exempel och så. Men
absolut, jag tyckte det var många bra frågor, men sen blir det ju så där när man sitter och pratar, så ibland så svarar de ju faktiskt på vissa frågor utan att man behöver ställa dem. Och då blir det lite fånigt att ställa dem en gång till sen.
Precis. Men det var allt vi hade för den här veckan. Nej, det var inte alls det. Det var allt vi hade för idag. Vi ses på torsdag igen. Men tack till våra samarbetspartners Automotorsport och TickRacingShop.com. Och glöm inte att ni alltid har 20% lyssnarrabatt i webbshoppen på stefanjohansson.art när ni anger rabattkoden Indupodden vid utcheckning. Och så missa inte vår Facebook-tävling också som vi har i samarbete med TicoRacingShop.com nu där det har chans att vinna en Scott Dixon-modell i skala 1-18. Men ja, det var det.
Det var det. Då kör vi. Ha en trevlig vecka.
Detsamma. Hej.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.